The Short Game is listener-supported on Patreon. If you'd like to support the show and join us on our Discord, head to theshortgame.net or patreon.com/theshortgame.
Welcome back to The Short Game. This is a show about short video games, games that respect your time. My name is Nate Heininger, and I am joined this week by one slicey co-host.
Ooh, dicey too, Laura Nash.
And this week we are returning to a game that we covered back on episode 337 that came out in October of 2022. A game that we absolutely loved and has had a lot of updates and a lot of changes in between when we covered it and today. And we were really gearing up for our 400th episode, which should be next in the feed. And we were really sort of marching towards a gap week or possibly a rerun of a previous episode. But this lovely update to Slice and Dice sort of fell in our laps, and Laura and I were fortunate enough to spend some time with it, and we thought, well, why don't we hop on and talk about a game that we absolutely love. This will be likely a shorter episode, but we're happy to get something out. And I don't know about you, Laura, but I've had a wonderful time re-engaging with this game, and this new update is fantastic.
Oh, it rained all day yesterday, and it was me, a blanket, some tea, and Slice and Dice. I could not think of a better cozy day when the weather was awful. For those who haven't played, Slice and Dice is a game where you have a party, you have enemies, it's all that kind of classic RPG stuff, but you also are literally rolling dice to decide your attack. So we won't get too into mechanics, you can listen to the old episode, but 3.0 had so many updates that the developer literally said they couldn't remember them to list them on the feature list.
Yeah, it's a really cool cycle just in general. So we covered Slice and Dice 1.0 again back in October, and I think it had been out for a little while, and someone in the Discord had pointed us to it. And you know what happens a lot of times with that is we kind of have a running list of games that we want to cover, and for various reasons things will make it to the top of the list or not. And we finally got around to covering Slice and Dice, what we now know as Slice and Dice 1.0. at the time it was just Slice and Dice.
It was all game. There was back in the olden days.
A year and a half ago. It feels like a millennia. But it was just a little game on Itch. I think it was $7. And we just absolutely loved it. And we put together an episode. And with the way our recording schedule goes, there's usually 3 or 4 days in between our record and our release. And so we recorded this on a Thursday afternoon or something like that. And then the very next day after we recorded it, Slice and Dice 2.0 came out, which was a free update to Slice and Dice 1.0, which is just hilarious timing because we could have done this game at any point. And it just happened to be that in between us recording it and us releasing it, the developer, Tan, it's T-A-N-N, a solo dev, although it looks like they got some support, at least from the audio in this new update, but a solo dev who, they released 2.0, where they really, really expanded the game, which I played around with for a while, just through the nature of the show, though I ended up dropping it, although I still pick this game up every once in a while. And then now, seemingly out of nowhere, they released the biggest update that this game has received, which is now being referred to as Slice and Dice 3.0, which, as Laura said, the developer has said, there is so many updates they literally lost track of, which is hilarious. And it has also brought it to iOS and Android, which really is, I think, the key home for a game like this. I'm really looking forward to seeing how this game grows and its user base grows, because it's like this might immediately become the best game on iPhone and Android.
And 3.0 has portrait mode, so it's already better than most mobile games out there. I think for me, one of the most radical changes to Slice and Dice 3.0 is just this has always fallen under the roguelike exception. The length of the games are still pretty quick, you know, the runs are relatively short, but there are so many different modes to this game that I feel like every time I'm playing it, you expect an update to this, that there can be new classes, new characters, maybe new overlays, maybe new skills. I didn't expect so many more modes to the game. So it truly feels enormous.
It really does. This feel like I had always thought of this as a complete game, even Sly Cinder.
Oh, yeah. It never felt incomplete.
Yeah. But now it feels like, wow, this is truly like a full game that even though, yes, you know, an individual run. I think one of my recent ones that I won, it took me about an hour and a half, but it was also one of my first runs since getting back into the game. So it was a little slower on just sort of like remembering the strategy and whatnot. So I think like, if you're really, you know, back in it, you could, you know, win a run in under an hour. And this game is pretty grueling, or not grueling, but unforgiving. So I think there's also a fair amount of 10, 15 minute runs baked into those, you know, hour long successful runs. But with these new modes, whether it's like skipping or just changing like some key fundamental elements of what you're doing, like I could see. If you want, you could spend seemingly an endless amount of time in this game.
But you also can start on level 8 and take the shortcut mode and just really speed your way through it. There are a lot of... I'm interested to know which modes I gravitate towards more, because there's going to be a lot of times where I'm in different moods. Sometimes I'll just want to play something out of the box. Sometimes I'm going to want to really pick and choose or test out new characters. There's a lot of ways to play this game now, and I think it'll fit into my life easier, especially when I could put it on my phone.
I'm like, so I went to dig back in for 3.0. I just re-downloaded it through Itch, and you know, it's nice if you bought it once, you don't have to buy it again. Although they're selling it for $9, so what a incredible deal! But I had already paid for it, and I got 3.0 for the, you know, without having to repurchase anything, just going back to the Itch page and re-downloading it and whatnot. But again, I really think the true home for this game is on your mobile device. And I haven't downloaded it yet because I'm terrified. I have to be very... This is my version of self-control, is that I just don't buy... It's how I quit smoking cigarettes.
I had to
cut it off at the source. I found that I could make the decision more easily standing in line at a gas station than I could at home with them in my pocket or something like that. So that's where the decision point had to be, is I had to stop buying them. And that's how I am with a lot of mobile games. It's why I haven't ever played Stardew Valley either, because I just know myself. Yeah. And I just know it's going to become all that I do on my phone. I have finally... seemingly, I think, cracked my Marvel Snap addiction, and so I'm kind of like phone game free right now, and I'm feeling.
When Bellatro and Slice and Dice go on your phone, are you ever going to be free?
I haven't put Bellatro. I'm still playing on my Steam Deck, but there's a element of purpose behind picking up the Steam Deck. and its heft. You know, that I've been able to control that, but my phone, you know, there's so many layers of addiction wrapped up in my phone that I'm always worried about any new game. But this I'm.
Well, we already know we like this I one. Know. That's the problem.
And I've been spending a little more time on planes lately, and I'm like, I think I found my new phone plane game. It had been Isle of Arrows. I talked about it on the end of the year episode, but I think this might be where I go now, because just the depth and the variety and just the core gameplay is so fun. If you're newer to the show or you missed the episode before for Slice and Dice, I highly recommend you get this game, but you also go back and listen to our previous episode where we really dig into how this game works. And I fell right back into it with this update. It's been
so much fun.
The
core mechanic is still rock solid. There was nothing wrong with 1.0.
No.
2.0 and 3.0 are just adding a lot of depth richness. And it's not like some games where they add a bunch of stuff and then the beginner game is overwhelming. Like, this titrates it very beautifully. Like, there's a lot, but you have to go through, unlock stuff, yada yada. It's doing it correctly. There are some 3.0s that messed up, just destroyed the core game for me. Yeah. This is not one of those.
Well, and the inherent scaling of how the game works, where you start with a party of five, and they're all sort of basic archetypes. Now, with the update, you've got some really, a wide variety of these new sort of basic archetypes. But as the game starts, you really have a core set of things that your team can do. And then you are making the choice on how they change and how they update as you. It's a limited set of choices. It's sort of a randomized choice system. But you kind of grow with the complexity on every single round. So by the end, especially with update 3.0, where there's so many new items and so many new abilities and whatnot, it gets pretty dense. If you're on round 20, you've got a lot of interlocking systems that are really, really playing with each other. But at the start of any round, you're rolling five dice and you're locking in what abilities you want to use, and it stays pretty simple. The enemies are pretty simple and it's pretty manageable. So even though all of this new stuff is added, I guess the way I'm thinking of it is almost like the root of the game is the exact same. There's just now a billion new branches coming off of this tree, whereas before it was only a million different branches. Now there's a billion, or seemingly an infinite amount of different branches. And it allows you to not have to relearn the whole game with 3.0. It just makes it so much more deep.
Yeah, and I reinstalled 3.0. It did kick me back into the tutorial, which you can dismiss, but I left it on because the tutorial shows up when you're doing a thing you've never done before.
Yes.
So if you're repeating an action, it will never show up. But if you have doing spells for the first time, or the first time since 3.0 was installed, it'll show up and try to help you. It's a smarter tutorial than most because it's not on. Everything is on and everything is off. It's only going to do it when you're triggering something you've never done before in this game, which I appreciated.
Yeah, well, that just speaks to something that I remember we spoke a lot on the original episode, and it really just stood out to me again playing this. It's just the attention to detail on this game is incredible. Whether it's the character design, the way they talk to each other, the way the spells interact with each other, it feels like a game that should break every once in a while when you get so many things. And not in the fun break way, like Balatro, you're like breaking it intentionally.
You've got a lot of modifiers and you can stack them in wild ways with inventory items, all kinds of the kind of things that your DM would ban in a homebrew game, you have routinely in this one.
Yeah.
But it does feel like it should break, and it doesn't.
It doesn't. And it still stays, even on some of my most powerful runs, I still feel like the game's challenging, and I really, really like that. Like this game, this is another game is similar to Balatro, where like I kind of wanted it to maybe be a podcast game for me, where I can sort of just like put it in, zone out, and play and whatnot. And it was not at all, because by time you get about halfway through the run,
you have to use your brain.
You really have to slow down. Yeah.
It works. You can podcast, listen to a podcast for the beginning of this game. I think if you are playing on easy mode, you probably could, but you do really need to think and use that undo button and really think about the order of operations, and you're just going to miss half the dialogue. So maybe for a hangout podcast where people are just chilling and you don't need to actually hear anything, but nothing with a plot for sure.
But a show like ours where we're just dealing such intricate, complicated information, I imagine you couldn't listen to, but
absolutely not. Yeah. Not this one.
Not this one. We expect you to be sitting on a couch in an empty room, staring at the wall while you listen
attentive
to the show.
Attentive listeners, taking notes.
It stays complicated. It stays challenging and deeply satisfying. And I've never been more grateful for an undo button, a limitless undo button.
Bless.
Then it had to be, I wonder, like, as a developer, like, this is such a tool for making a game challenging, you know? And mm-hmm. like, it's such a delicate balance, I think, where this game lets you undo essentially everything. You can click undo all the way back to your dice selection. I think once you've
chosen your dice selection, you're locked.
Yeah. Yeah. But once you've locked in a die, you're done, but you can redo all of the order of operations on how you chose to place your attacks, who you chose to attack, who you chose to heal, who you chose to shield, etc. And you'd think that would almost nullify some of the challenge of the game. And I guess in some ways it does, because you can if you attack someone, you realize oh shit, I should have, you know, you can fix it. But I still find this game incredibly challenging.
Yeah. There are times I've leveled up my character so much, and then I get into a fight with somebody who all the what you do to me bounces back onto you. So they call it pain in this one. The damage you cause is reciprocated back onto you. And I was basically like, oh, if my paladin does anything, they're dead. So I had to figure out the order's operation of, like, maybe I can do enough buffs that they can attack first, but then, oh no, that buffs the weapon. And then, you know, it all became order of operations about, like, mm-hmm. when buffs, what's buffing what. I had a duplicate item that would duplicate the last thing I played. So that got really messy. I mean, I went back and replayed that game over and over again because I didn't want my paladin to die in round one.
Yeah.
And it was going to no matter what. And so even with a perfect dice selection, I just kept going back and forth. And that's because I felt motivated to save this character I really liked. It was a really good character. I wanted it for the rest of the battle. And eventually I just thought, you know, he's going to do a heroic first strike and get out. But how can I make him do the most damage before he dies? So it became a different Maximin. And that's what keeps it challenging, is that I kept solving different problems each time I did the undo.
Mm-hmm.
I got an indecisive award for using the undo button many times in one term. You get achievements for
the
interesting things in this game, but that's an example. Like, it was still hard. I had the undo button because I was in an impossible situation.
I love the first of all, that's a really good example of the sort of tangle you can get yourself in this game, where you're like, all right, I know a party member is going to die, so what's the best use of that party member I can do before they're dead? Or, like, could I bounce the damage around in a way where it kills someone else instead of this guy, because I know this guy...
Couldn't they tank and take all of the damage somehow so that no one else takes any injury? Like, how bad can I make their death?
Yeah, or I had a character who could revive dead players, mm-hmm. but it's only one side of the die. So, of course, you're still reliant on just rolling that die, and you only have so many rolls. But every time there were a number of items that I received in order that would basically buff someone's health pool or their pre-shielding, and I just gave everything to the person who could revive people, because I'm mm-hmm. like, at the end of the day, if I just have to tank a few rounds and just keep rolling, trying to roll on that revive, then maybe I can pull one out where everybody else has died. And it actually did pay off for me one round where everybody died and I was able to tank two rounds. Was just, you know, hoping, like, this is the gambling side of it, the dice rolling side, which mm-hmm. I, you know, as a D&D player and just as a, you know, video, like, dice rolling is so often in the background of games. Sometimes they will, like, you know, they'll give you a little script on the screen that tells you the dice roll and the outcome. This one, you're on screen, you're seeing big, beautiful dice just bounce around the screen and whatnot. So you get that sort of, like, I don't know, like, casino feel of, like, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. Give me the hilarious little design of a tombstone with an arrow coming out of it. And I, you know, and I managed to roll that, and it felt like such an awesome moment, because I get to revive three of my party members and bring the whole thing back around, you know, from the brink of death. And it's like that sort of stuff that, like, this game just, you get in these weird, complicated situations, and it is more of like it's like a JRPG puzzle game, mm-hmm. right? Where you've got your, you know, that I think that's what it's sort of emulating here, but in the guise of a, you know, people call it a deck builder even though it's not exactly the right word, but you are building the dice and you're building your party. It's all, you know, that's the primary gameplay rather than like a JRPG thing.
And it's still, despite all the crunchiness, it still feels relatively light. I feel very intellectually challenged. I feel like it's a puzzle game, but I don't feel like I have to remember anything. All the words are there. I can always look stuff up. I don't have to memorize anything. The word, you know, you roll over something, you can see it. So all of this complexity was added, but I don't, like, just as I praise Bellatro, I love where I can look up the text, like, all the information's on the card, like, everything is right there. It's your fault if you can't solve it. Yeah. Everything is right there, and you made this decision.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing I like. It's not, you opt into the complexity, but it's also an issue where you can undo it, and you could make it harder on yourself if you want it to be harder.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, with all the modes now, there's, you know, easy, normal, and hard, and then there's a ton of different, like, you know, you start with different features. You can pick your own party now, or you can
do a random.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And you, or you can do a random party, or you can do like a pre-constructed, like, it should be balanced, you know, and you can really go into it with what degree of challenge that you want. And yeah, it's awesome. I wanted to, like, one of my favorite things is all the new characters now. And in 1.0, it was like fighter, mage, paladin, you know, and it got more complex than that, but it was a lot of stuff that you are used to from just like standard RPG stuff. Mm-hmm. And I rolled a random party, and this is my random party. It was the gardener, a cultist, an alloy, which is like a tanky, shieldy kind of character, a mystic, and a fighter. So I got a little bit of the original, but then like a gardener, you know, and all of their moves are all about healing or growing abilities. So like a lot of their abilities, you use it once and it increases the ability for the next time you use it. And
there's so, even a dancer.
Yeah, dancer. Like there's so many. I haven't even seen them all because the achievement system in this game is the kind of achievement system that I think we want in games, where it's like you are rewarded for doing ridiculous things and your reward is new characters and new items and things like that. And then you also, they just bake in, like, there's some standard progression. So it's like kill 25 enemies and you unlock a new character. But then there's also like you have a single item grow 5 times in one fight, and now that unlocks a new item that you'll get, or like stun an enemy that was about to kill you. Some stuff is really, really challenging. Some stuff you're just going to end up with, and every time you do it, you're unlocking more and more items, and everything is right there. You can, every item, every spell, everything, you can read on screen exactly what it's going to do. And it is always like one of the many wonderful attention to details is like this. The developer is a really good, like, technical writer. Everything does exactly what you expect it to do based off of usually, like, mm-hmm. 3 to 5 words.
It's incredibly really precise.
Yeah.
And I also want to give a shout-out.
Where's Shane? Magic could learn from the way that this person has really nailed exactly what the item does.
Yeah. Well, there's still a ton to explore. There's not too much more for me to say, but I do have one thing I want to shout out, and that is the character of Clumsy, which is a person with an egg on their head.
Yes.
And some of the dice rolls are cantrips, which means they automatically activate as soon as they land, and some of them damage yourself.
Nice.
So there's a chance that you're going to do damage, and there's a chance you're going to damage yourself, and it happens every single time you roll the die.
Yeah.
So you're Clumsy. You have an egg on your head.
I got the character of Lazy a bunch, which meant 4 of the 6 sides of the die just did nothing. So you're like, all right, well, I got to hope I roll the 2 of the ones that do something and then upgrade this person as quickly as I can. But yeah, I don't think there's a whole lot more to say. I think the one last part that I wanted to give a shout out to is that on the previous episode, I had been certain that one of the sound effects was somebody making a sound with their voice, with their mouth. Whenever you click on a die, it makes like a click, click. Noise.
Oh, the that one. Yeah.
And I was certain that it was a person's voice. And I said it on the episode, and the developer actually listened to the episode and reached out and said, yes, I was right. So first of all, just like that is hilarious.
Perfect. Yes.
Yeah. And then I'm almost certain they've doubled down on it. There's now in the menu, when you're clicking different menu items, it's going like, and I'm certain it's this person's voice again. And I just, that's so funny to me to do like little mouth clicks and stuff as core sound effects for your game. It's so funny, and it works really, really well. And I don't even know that most people would notice it, but for whatever reason, it stuck out to me, and I loved it. So
just one of the many things to love about this game.
Yeah, there's so many little things. I love this game so much. So anyway, we're going to leave it at that. We'll be back next week with a full episode. Laura's got something. I saw like a tiny sneak preview of it while we were prepping for this, and I'm like,
you saw
terrified
an empty PowerPoint deck that has a lot of blank slides I put in so that Nate wouldn't see any of the content when I needed him to test that screen sharing worked.
just the core effort that I can tell that she's already put into it is making me very excited. So I don't even really know what it is yet, but Laura has something prepared for our 400th episode, which will be next week. We'll be back. Check out Slice and Dice. Again, and remember, the show is supported on Patreon. You can check out all the links and everything at shortgame.fm. I'm Nate Heininger.
And I'm Laura Nash.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks again, everyone, for listening.
Thanks, y'all.